like to welcome the Deputy Minister, delegation from the Independent Development Trust. Honorable members, welcome stakeholders, interested parties, all welcome. Whoever is leading the presentation, we are ready.
Good morning, Chair. Our CEO will make the presentation, and also good morning to the honorable members. And he'll make the presentation which we have crafted and submitted to this House. I just want to start by saying that indeed, as we had said before, we looked forward to the time when we could again present to this House, and we have tried in the presentation slides to be as direct, frank in the assessment of our situation, including the negative and adverse audit finding. We've also reflected on the prolonged protracted process of our reconfiguration, that is the business case, the new mandate, and handing. But despite of all that, we will be speaking to the concrete steps that were taken. But without any waste of time, I will now ask the CEO to make the comprehensive presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, the Deputy Minister, Chair of the Board of Trustees. My name is Godeko Hakade. I am the Chief Executive Officer of IDT, having assumed duties last year. I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether with your permission, you would like the delegation of IDT to be introduced, or we can carry on.
Yes, please. You may do so to remind the people if we still have old faces or they are new.
Yes. Thank you very much. Obviously, the delegation is led by the Deputy Minister, whom everybody knows very well, Honorable Jeremy Cronin. We also have on my right the Chairperson of the Board, Dr. Somadu Tafikeni. We also have Mr. Wakar Ayanda Wakaba, who is our interim COO, Chief Operating Officer. Just behind me, we have Mr. Mzolis Fukula, who is the head of office in the office of the CEO. Honorable Chair and honorable members, we will be joined by the Deputy Chairperson of the Board, Mr. Protin Twalid, as well as the Chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, Ms. Rekati Bolton, and they will be accompanied by the CFO. I think they are held up in traffic. Apologies for them. That's the delegation, Chairperson, from the IDT.
I think for now we'll make do with those who are there, not those who are coming in the future hence.
Yes. My apology. Chair, the way we have structured the report is basically giving a background, introductory background to the performance report of the Independent Development Trust for the year ended 31st March 2015. The second part will deal more with the actual performance indicators, just highlighting the performance against the set targets for that reporting period. And the last part will be dealing with the financial performance, which will also look at challenges and some of the issues that we are currently dealing with relating to the financial performance of the organization. In terms of the conceptual background, Chair and honorable members, it is important to mention that the IDT has been in a transition or transformation process almost the last 5 years. And part of the challenges that IDT faced can be directly attributed to some of those prolonged processes. For instance, the issue which has been discussed in the committee before relating to the finalization of the business case of the IDT. There was a lot of work that has been put into that process this past year after the end of the financial year driven by DPW, which culminated in the approval of a concept of what animal IDT should look like going forward. And this was also presented at the DPW meeting like in December 2015. There are advanced processes in terms of putting up a recommendation to cabinet, which thereafter will then followed by additional processes, amongst which we'll be looking at the legislative processes to give IDT a legal status in terms of the founding legislation. Those processes will be driven by this committee. So, Chairperson, there is some positiveness about the progress relating to that part. I'm mentioning it because it has assisted the organization to plan better. At least over the next 3 years, we now know what the direction or the future direction of the organization. There has been a lot of engagement with stakeholders that looks into the support and input into this process. IDT has now been given a mandate as a fully-fledged public entity of Department of Public Works, focusing on program management services related to social infrastructure rollout. This is an area I'm going to come back to and put emphasis on in terms of the turnaround strategy that we'll discuss just shortly. The bullet chain is important in the sense that IDT has experienced significant growth in its portfolio over the last 5 to 7 years. In the last 7 years, we were sitting at a portfolio of just above R1 billion. And as of the reporting year, which is the last financial year, the portfolio growth was at 6.3 billion. Now, it is important to recognize this because whatever systems, processes that have been in place definitely now are either outdated or they do not have the capacity to carry the workload. One example, if you look at the slide that I'm going to reflect, is to see how the human resource capacity of the organization has been constrained. In fact, as the portfolio was increasing exponentially, the human resource capacity has in fact remained stagnant and in some years has even reduced because the staff complement of IDT is sitting at about 440 since 2009. And that's part of the reforms that we are busy with to relook at the restructuring. And by this current financial year or the reporting year, that complement was sitting at around, actually the field force was sitting at around 350-something, which really shows that definitely the organization had to have challenges. These are the matters that we are addressing rapidly, and they have contributed to the negative outcomes. Chair, one important matter I wanted to raise up front, having started in the organization, I have done my own prognosis of what the problems are. I have had an opportunity to engage board in 3 meetings now. And part of the challenges that related to the performance, basically, and also resulting in the negative outcome of the audit by the AG, which is a disclaimer. I listed in the main 4 areas in the slide. My first paragraph there, Chair, that gives you a sense that IDT has for the last 11 financial years before 2013-14 had unqualified audits, which is actually a very good track record. Perhaps it is important to reflect on this because the question is, what has happened? I have already indicated that this probably has been waiting to happen because of the response to the rapid growth of the business has not been commensurate to us in terms of both business processes, both systems in terms of your information technology as well as human resources in terms of your technical expertise and skills. Also, in the course of the transformation exercise, there are some critical positions that were left by those who resigned from the organization. And again, I must say we have a great reward to replace those expertise, but also in terms of our restructuring exercise, we are creating more capacity in the field of professions in the built environment. So the best area that was a challenge, which is an area of program management services, that is the core business, there was a challenge in the incompleteness of information supporting the program assets and liabilities, which relates to the value of the programs that are recorded in the balance sheet of the organization. This is a matter that is of utmost priority in our response plan to the audit findings. I will come back to it later. The second matter was the issue around revenue recognition. There was a particular revenue policy that IDT adopted, which was not found to be in compliance with international accounting standards, specifically IAS 18. Basically, there, the AG found that we should have recorded more management fee revenue if we were charging revenue on the retention money that are not yet paid to contractors that have completed projects. Automatically, that affected the trade and trade receivables because it is the other leg of raising the revenue, so that is the money that is received from the organization. A certain reason to that also was an issue relating to cut-off dates where the expenditure, because IDT model is based on raising management fee on actual program expenditure. There were some challenges relating to the cut-off. I think the challenges are basically straightforward because most companies, for some strange reasons, especially emerging ones, will submit their invoices very late after the end of the financial year, I mean as late as July, and that has created problems in terms of the accounting recognition of revenue because it has to be matched to the appropriate financial year. The third area was the lack of appropriate audit regarding the impairment provision of trade and trade receivables. Again, Chair, I think there was a fair amount of estimate by the organization in terms of indicating or estimating how much would be doubtful or bad debts, that is the amount that may not be collected by the organization. The basic principle was that IDT deals with government departments, which ordinarily supposed to be able to pay for their dues, and therefore the provision that was created there was 10% of what was outstanding. Unfortunately, and correctly so, the AG did raise the fact that the international accounting standard demands that you do not estimate this provision on a global basis. We have to do it on an individual basis, which means you must go to each and every department and check whether, in fact, the balance that they are owing is likely to be paid, and also produce evidence that you have followed those steps of evaluating each and every balance to be collectible or not collectible. The fourth area, it's really a collection of a number of misstatements which were picked up in the financial statement, which collectively aggregate at 7.3 billion. And if you compare that with the materiality level, then it was found that they are material to warrant the AG to be concerned. So those are the four main areas that are related to the disclaimer of opinion. It's largely technical issues, but also largely accounting matters that are required. Professional opinions and also that required some measure of interpretation. I must say, Chair, it might sound straightforward for honorable members to note that there was an effort to seek a number of professional opinions from the experts, including companies like Altimax, which is an association of accountants, South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, the National Treasury, because all these matters were not simply straightforward. But at the end, there was an understanding that there is a need for revisiting how the accounting is done by IDT. In fact, this is a very important process because it also informed all other implementing agents in terms of how to account for accounting for agency transactions, so that whatever happens in the agency must also relate to what was intended by the principal department. The further explanation here, I think I already touched, I'm not going to repeat this. It is just basically to indicate that probably when the growth in the business portfolio of the organization was envisaged, there should have been effort to have concomitant responses in terms of the systems, processes, and the people. However, I must say that it's not an easy as ABC because also IDT has been boxed by financial constraints in terms of its own cash flow and in terms of its own sustainability. So it was some kind of a catch-22 situation for them to begin to have adequate capacity to invest in these systems and processes. However, in the long term, there is a priority focus in those areas. One other area I think I just need to highlight in the last one, in terms of internal control systems and environment. Currently, IDT has got very good governance structures. My assessment is that they have an effective audit committee. They also have an audit, internal audit function that is very functional. It costs us with an external provider. However, there were issues relating to access program management services and project accounting that required additional controls to be framed. Of course, it is for business. If those controls are not strong, they were definitely going to result in the negative outcome. Now, in terms of responses, the board has already put up and approved as early as July a board meeting, a turnaround strategy which focuses on a two-pronged approach. A two-pronged approach if you look at also the detailed financial plan audit explained by the AG. But the first one focuses on leadership review and management accountability. Now, in this regard, the immediate action for the board was to relook at the delegation of authority to make sure that it is in fact effective throughout the organization, focusing largely to what the board would deserve as its own responsibility vis-a-vis what they delegate to the chief financial officer and management. We also tabled a turnaround plan, which was discussed and workshopped with the board. And I will come back to it, but it's got four critical pillars that turnaround plan that actually covers not only the issue of addressing financial management challenges, but looking holistically at overhauling the entire business and also looking at governance and management responsibilities. Paramount to that plan is we aim to attain an unqualified report in 2015-16, which sounds very ambitious indeed from a disclaimer, but what we actually aiming at is to make sure that all the technicalities that has resulted in the limitation scope that resulted to the AG not being happy with the financial information to address that immediately. The medium to long term will be looking holistically at re-engineering the entire business. I will come back to that and indicate what exactly we are trying to do. The other area, which I think is very important, is the issue of consequence management. It is very heartening to see how committed the board is in terms of ensuring that there is accountability for or consequences for actions by officials. There are a number of officials that are being taken into task. We've seen a phenomenon where a number of them are resigning from the organization. But those who are managing projects and are found to have had a suspected corrupt relationships with either the clients or the service providers who are delivering on our programs, we have taken them to task. The starting point was the chief finance officer who was suspended immediately after the audit report. but there were a number of other challenges that pointed to some kind of recklessness from his side. That process was wrapped up, and then I think by December he was dismissed by the board. The process also of replacing the CFO was undertaken in earnest, early enough to ensure that there was no gap or challenges that the IDT would face. Initially, we had an interim person from the private sector that assisted the organization, but we have now appointed a fully-fledged CFO who started or assumed the duties on the 4th of January this year. He is already up and running TM with the functions. Right, in terms of the turnaround strategy itself, aims to reposition the IDT as a premier social franchise program delivery management entity. It also aims at regaining confidence of shareholders in government and various client partners and stakeholders. Part of the reason we emphasize on this is that the way IDT is positioned is actually at the center of the developmental goals of government, which includes employment creation, which also includes community empowerment, focusing on critical sectors like the youth, women, and people with disabilities, but also generally ensuring the upliftment of communities where the infrastructure projects are running. That really requires, therefore, that government commits its resources to IDT and must have confidence that there will be full accountability and the management of those programs to ensure that those goals are indeed achieved. The also one important area is the issue of financial sustainability and through the financial management and accountability. We have started an engagement process with government, especially the National Treasury and the Department of Public Works. In terms of the new business case, we are also looking at funding models for IDT to make sure that it will be sustainable. So far, the new approach of program management services and funding has proved to be working. The IDT has not been given any transfer from government except some relief funds which were dedicated to the transformation project, which was 150 million over a period of 3 years. But generally, our balance sheet and also our income statement doesn't look very bad. I think I will touch on some of those points when I get to the finance area. We effectively be able to manage our cash flow on a going concern basis. And there are challenges, of course, that I will touch, and this that needs to be addressed in order for us not to be in a danger zone. We also would like to develop and utilize effective and efficient business systems and processes to successfully implement programs that contribute to improvement of quality of life of communities. We have already started a business process re-engineering exercise, and we've been given enough by the board to pursue this process. We're also relooking at all our operational systems, including human resources as well as finances. I will also mention that we have engaged services of some technical experts in accounting and also in business development to make sure that we reposition this organization. Because IDT is almost a reborn organization, so we would like to set the right footing for it as we implement the new business case. So these are the four pillars of our turnaround strategy: financial viability and sustainability, organizational integrity and governance, self-delivery improvement and innovation, organizational reconfiguration and professionalization. So we have given ourselves 5-year term, which is on three phases: the short, medium, and long term. However, as I indicated earlier, immediate attention is going to be in year one on turning around the financial management situation. In terms of financial viability, we're looking at improving our revenue billing and collection. One of the important things to note is that IDT has previously really operated as a non-governmental organization, a trust that was not operating in any way as a business. So we are inculcating new business culture where IDT must be able to manage a number of processes, including client service management, billing systems, etc. It's an area that also has been appointed by the AG as lacking in the previous financial year. We have now put our processes to ensure that our billing systems are accurate and also we are able to collect revenue on time, because revenue origin was also another area that was a concern. We're also looking at expansion of the revenue base. In this instance, we're looking at the current program of government that we're managing across the 3 years, but also, as we know, we do have some other work through strategic partnerships that we engage from time to time. Obviously, working with the Department of Public Works, we had partnerships that were very successful with Vodacom under the EPWP, etc. We also had some engagement also with the mining sector as well. We would like to secure acceptance of the management fee instruction that the National Treasury Service has been operational, but I think the main important thing there is that part of the culture that I'm talking about, the new culture and paradigm, is to make sure that government departments understand how IGT is operating. Often we are compared to other entities who I believe should not be comparable to us, like the Development Bank of South Africa and other banks, the Taleb Bank, Kuha. IGT is a premier infrastructure program management entity of government. And IGT has no profit motive. What we do the implementation of government programs. All we are doing in our financing model is to look for cost recovery basis. So there was a negotiation with National Treasury to put up a practice note that begins to guide how we charge management fee because of those disputes. And I think it has been helpful. What we are trying just to highlight here, because it leads to our sustainability going forward, that we're going to be talking, we've started talking with government departments to begin to explain how IGT financing model operates. The improvement of financial management is for certain the key in our agenda. In terms of where we are now, we put up a very detailed program action plan for the AG issues that we identified. And as I'm sitting here, I'm very happy with the progress. Honorable Chair and members, DM, our project reconciliations and related services are fully automated already. We are going forward to automate other business processes which we have tested, and we make sure that are going to be very effective in terms of addressing our shortcomings. Well, on overall, in terms of integrity and governance, it is very important that I mentioned that we have developed the draft business case, but we also tabled at MIMEC a protocol how we want to work with various government departments, especially the provincial departments of public works, as well as the national departments. The protocol really governs the manner in which IGT should be and is expected to deliver on the infrastructure programs to make sure that we comply with all the relevant legislation, also the policies that the National Department of Public Works has put in place. We also embarked on a corruption and anti-fraud strategy. We've got a hotline, but we are now focusing on implementation. A number of officials have been brought to book. We are looking beyond officials. We are looking at collusion with the private sector companies that we are partnering with, who will also be taken to task. I must mention also that the board commissioned a forensic investigation on certain projects that were identified as problematic. And the more significant ones, and some of the challenges or rather actions that were taken against the CFO, former CFO, related to some of the work relating to the forensic investigation. A phase one preliminary outcome was tabled before the board, and now we entered phase two. We just around November, December entered phase two, where the audit is going to cover comprehensively every aspect that was identified or every matter that was reported by whistleblowers to our hotline and also to our institution. In the area of service delivery innovation, I think there's a number of initiatives that I've listed there. the important thing I think I must emphasize, the IDT model deals a lot with supply chain management processes. We've overhauled the process, we've got a new policy and strategy that is adopted. We've also relooked at our delegation of authority in that area as a result. The aim really is to eliminate irregular expenditure. What we found, which is something very, very important, the bulk of what constituted irregular expenditure when it comes to program funds related to technical issues of lack of understanding or consequences of actions by officials. For instance, one example I can give is the period of advertising a tender. If it had to be 21 days and then you close the tender within 20 days or 22 days, then immediately it becomes an irregular expenditure because it's non-compliance either with your own supply chain management policy or with the triple PFA. The other area would be area of triple DE, where you find that you have to have the original certified certificate, and then if you have a copy that you have accepted, then immediately it becomes irregular. So since November last year, we've taken through all the officials that are involved in the supply chain through training. That training is supposed to finish now in February, and we are covering everyone, including top executives. Already we've received a positive feedback from the consultants about how people feedback around the number of issues that were initially not understood to be resulting in the irregular expenditure. We also following up in areas where it might have been a wrongdoing, which is the real issue that might be suspected corruption and so on. Those are the matters that we're investigating in terms of that aspect. We also want to say that we are relooking at our CDP program, that is Contractor Development Program. In the next slide, I will show how we have set the target and what we have achieved. But the other aspect we are looking at more closely is to make sure that there is effective empowerment. Those companies that go through the training, they indeed access work from the government infrastructure program so that they can begin to get more and more experience and also more accreditation, better accreditation by CITB. In terms of organizational reconfiguration and professionalization, this is an area we've taken a stand on. All our program managers, we want them registered. A lot of people at ITT have high qualifications, but in terms of professional organization, it's an area that's lacking. We are busy engaging in engagements with CBE to make sure how we can put up a plan in order to make sure that those professionals are indeed registered. We also do award ambassadors as well as ITT in terms of training and development. We also relooking at our organizational structure so that we make sure that it responds to the new business model, and also looking on some of the concerns that were raised by governments relating to the remuneration framework. And that work is underway. We will be able to report to the mother department as soon as we have wrapped it up. I've more or less touched on the issues that are raised in the slide. Safe to say that in addition to the top executive posts, we are looking at immediately filling a number of positions that have been vacant, where there have been acting people or people in acting capacity. We also targeting senior positions in the area of supply chain, which we've identified as a key risk area, but also in the actual program delivery services. For instance, the executive for program management services will be filled soon. Just like this, basically the vision and mission of IT, which I think the court is familiar with. Let me rather highlight the key deliverables. This slide also talks to the alignment of IDT work with the 14 outcomes of government. So these are the critical outcomes that are immediately obvious, directly leading to the work that we do, like basic quality education, where we assist the Department of Basic Education in rolling up infrastructure for schools, in terms of new schools, replacement schools, and also repairs and maintenance. In terms of number two, long and healthy life, also we have a lot of projects and programs for Department of Health. We also involved in the EPWP program, as I indicated, but within the infrastructure program itself, we're creating a lot of employment. Also, we're looking at sustainable rural communities. One of the most critical benefits that IDP has is the social facilitation program, which also is supported by a community empowerment program to make sure that in those rural communities where projects are running, there is a direct benefit by those who are in the locality in terms of jobs, but also in terms of injecting some vibrancy in the economic, in the local economic activity. Chair, we've got two major programs in IDC. Main program one is the core business, I would say, integrated self delivery, which is about the delivery of quality social infrastructure, which must be done on time and within budget and scope. I would add and say also quality there, because it's one of the most important concerns of our client partners. The objective is to ensure IDT has an distinctive development approach, which I've just mentioned, because this was an underlying element of empowerment of our own communities, so that they can receive own, manage, and sustain their own development. In terms of program two, that they carry the operations in terms of administration, we also want to see a compliant organization that is result-based, also efficient and focused on the core business. This therefore requires that we maintain a clean governance and also accountable. These are the performance highlights for the financial year 2014-15. If you look at the pie chart, I hope in the PowerPoint projection there you can see, although the bottom slide is not probably going to be visible because of the color of the index, it's the performance that is effective, that big slide, which was about 65% overall in that year. If it's between 86% and 115, we regard that performance as effective. And then if you look at the blue slide, it's actually when it's very effective, which is above average. When it's between 115 and 130, and there we had performance target of 18% that formed the slice. And then when it's ineffective, we had 4%, it's between 0% and 50%. And when it's partially effective, it's about 18%, when it's between 51% and 85%. Now, this is just a summary of achievement of targets. I will not go into each and every one, although I can say they are all important. Because if you look at our indicators, they're largely informed by the program spend, because the indicators are more based on how much value we delivered in terms of projects. We targeted 7 billion rand, and we actually performed at 6.3 billion. That then gives us a target of 55% that what we wanted to spend on BEE companies. And then we actually spent 57%, which connects to about 4.2 billion of that 60.3 billion. And if you go down and look at how much value of contracts that we awarded on women, it's targeted 20%, and then we actually spent 27%. That converts to 1.4 and 1.7 billion respectively. And then the approximate value of contracts that we awarded to youth companies or youth-owned companies with targeted 15%, but the result was 17%. So if you look at the numbers, it's between 1.05 and 1.08. That was the actual settlement. Now, basically, we had 40 departments we thought we would be able to support, and we actually supported 44, which was not bad. We also had, for DBE, DBE is one of the biggest programs of IDT. There were targeted 50 new schools and replacement schools that were to be delivered in 2014-15. And we actually delivered 42, which is slightly less than what we targeted. We also had, I think, approximate value of contracts awarded to contractor development program, 4%, and then we achieved 2.5%. It converts to about 225 million. So that is the actual target. I know in the report of the AG, he did mention that he was not happy with 30% of the target, 50% relating to evidence that was supported that was not necessarily acceptable, but the other 15% being audit evidence that they could not validate as correct and accurate. One of the matters we are focusing on in business process re-engineering is exactly to deal with the systems that we used, the tools that we used for targeting, setting of targets, which needs to be more scientific so that we are able to target correctly. I must say, IDG business is very fluid because of the nature of the business, but even more so, there isn't a proper process. We are in the Department of National Treasury Chair and Deputy Minister. So that I said to them, look, you need to have certainty in terms of the multi-year projection. Because IDT gets 2 billion rand today, tomorrow the department can say we are withdrawing the business, and it just doesn't make sense because you do not have that certainty. But if it's actually part of the medium-term expenditure framework planning process, you are able to expect at least that in year one, this is how much you are going to deal with, in year two, this is how much you're going to deal with. That also helps also the organization in its sustainability campaign. In terms of this one, we also had a number of annual targets. I think I can cite here the issue of a qualified audit. Obviously, we now know that we have not achieved that target. In fact, that's the only target I would like to indicate that it actually should have been far less than that. As I remember, we were talking about 25% because we have performance information, but the main challenge is in the financial information. I think I can move on that one, but we have some of the programs in place, like the plans, like human resource plans. We are reviewing those because we believe that once we have finalized the business case, we must have a proper human resource strategy and plan that talks to the new business model. This is a very important slide. I think the issue here is what I was saying earlier on. The efficiency ratio has to be targeted at around 6.5%. This is from our own measurement over years of what capacities we need in order to take on programs. Once you have an increasing program spend, it has a strain on your operational costs, it has a strain on your resources. We're currently struggling with the ratio of program managers to the actual projects on the ground. So that shows if the efficiency ratio is very low, it's worrying because it means we do not have adequate capacity. Equally so, if it will be very high, that is higher than our 7% or 8%, then it means there's too much spending on operations as compared to what you really need in order to deliver on the program. I think the international benchmark is around 10%. We're also looking at the number of strategies, research projects that we wanted to embark on. We targeted 5 and we achieved 5. This slide shows the projections of the portfolio over a period of 3 years. You will see that the black line. The black line, which relates to 2014-15, shows that we spent about 6.3 billion when we targeted 6.6. And then if you look at 2013, we were 5.6, and if you look at the previous year, 11-12, we were 4.1. You will see in the current year, what I was indicating earlier on, that because of the fluidity of business and also a number of uncertainties and the challenges relating to performance, we have slightly gone down in terms of that performance line. This is now the breakdown of the portfolio of the science department. I'm not going to go into deep. As I indicated, Department of Education is one of our biggest clients at around 54%, followed by the Department of Justice and Correctional Services, and then also there's the bigger slice for the EPWP program. If you look at the measures to address underperformance, I've already indicated that we we are engaging government departments. I think our mother department as well as National Treasury are key. But we also want to engage departments so that there is some kind of a planning process that is aligned between what the implementing agents do and what government is doing. Because if the planning processes are not aligned, we're going to have challenges. The number of work opportunities created through the IDP portfolio, we targeted 50,000. I think we always at least deliver all the targets for the EPWP. But however, there are some challenges that we're working on. Fortunately, when it comes to issues of verification of beneficiaries and so on, we're working very close with the department. With the new system they are rolling out, going to help us a lot as well. In terms of contracts awarded to PDP participants, we are not very happy with the program currently, but it's an area that we are focusing our energies to overhaul, as indicated earlier on. That is our ultimate goal, the goal of achieving an unqualified audit opinion. We've developed a very detailed plan that covers almost all the areas of concern raised by the AP. However, we are lifting up the most critical ones, which relate to the four areas of disclaimer by the AG. We're also looking at improvement in cost recovery levels. Now we're reviewing all our contracts that we find with the client departments, not only to relook at the management fees, but also to look at an issue that is bothering us, which is the issue of litigation. There are a number of challenges, Chairperson and Honorable Members, that IDT, or I'd really rather say, my view is not IDT's own making. Hence, we are looking at how we are contracting with government departments. We were asked to make an example, to make a comment on the new regulations that the CIDP is going to issue out to penalize those who pay companies very late. Something that is very close to our heart, because we want to empower those companies, especially the emerging ones. But however, sometimes our head are tied, because before we pay them, we must get funds transfers from the various departments. Sometimes they do come on time, but in some instances, you find that you don't get the funds transferred on time, which ultimately constrains you from paying the contractors on time on the ground. Now, contractors do not know that kind of arrangement. All they know, IDT is who I contracted with, so they hit us. They take us to court, or they threaten us with litigation because of those dynamics. So part of my work is to look at the entire value chain, to make sure that we have a system that works for government, which is dealing with all these blockages. These are some of the projects which I would not tell the tale of time. Must I dwell on them? Because if you look at the picture on the left, it really looked like a haunted house, but you will be surprised that there, that was an early child development center where children were studying, or it's a junior primary school. Now, clearly, it's not only a hazard to those children, but you cannot really have a conducive learning environment there. If you look at the right, this is the upgraded one. This is some other body school in Bloemfontein. This is a little bit early childhood development center in KZN. And this is the High Court in Bukwana, one of the world class kind of works done by IDT. The minister is going to open this court soon. Recently, there was a High Court delegation just to look at when it started operating, but there will be an official opening soon. We really would like to say it was not an easy job. There were some challenges also learned on this project, where it actually spoke to our need to align our processes, that is IDT, public works, as well as local government, because there were a lot of challenges relating to approval processes. In fact, the last I know, there was a big process also challenged with parking and approval of those, but those things were sorted out later. But it actually gave us a lot of lessons in order to avail those in the future. This is Bernhauser Community Health Center in the KZN, and this is also the medical unit in Kimberley Hospital in the Northern Cape. Chair, this is governance structures, board and board committees. I do want to also emphasize once again that the design and structure of the ICC are working very well. Obviously, the government structures on their own have to be supported by very effective executive management, which will ultimately ensure that the combination of what the trustees as accounting authority and the management as implementing executive, you know, those speak the same language. We are definitely looking at strengthening our critical skills in key areas. Already, we are very happy with finance. We have got a new CFO who has indicated to us that he has a very clear plan of how to turn around the IDT finances. We are also looking at the other committees, SPNP, which is a committee that focuses on programs, Human Resource Committee, and so on. All those committees have done an internal reassessment or evaluation of their work, which will be informing the new strategy going forward. These are the key priorities of the board to contribute in the development of the IDT business case. I think they have excellently led that process. And as I indicated, now the process is at an advantage within the Department of Public Works. They also provided leadership towards the long-term financial sustainability of the organization. IDT has a lot of potential, Chair and Honorable Members. The matter that we were not very certain about a couple of years back, but with the engagement with National Treasury, I think they also contributed in ensuring that we check out our story, because they indicated that we are not going to find you for the distance. You must find a way of sustaining yourself. Now, all that this is doing, that will indicate later in the financial area, is to make sure that our systems of governance when it comes to collection of revenue, etc., are in fact strengthened. Ensuring effective governance and compliance and a culture of consequent management, I've already touched on that. The recruitment of new management team, including the CEO and CFO, is ensuring that we have a smooth leadership in the organization, but also securing operational stability of the organization through providing parameters for recruitment, for new staff, and also enhancing of business process systems. This is just the organizational structure as is now. I'm not going to go into details. This is the shareholder compliance record. We have managed to comply with most of the requirements. The quarterly shareholder reports, that is the executive authority, the compliance with the submissions of relevant information to the AG for audit, and also the requirements for submission of budget plans, APP, we have indicated our performance in that regard. I'm not going to talk to the slide because I've already spoken about it, but just to put emphasis, if you look at the blue line, that's the growth of IDT business over the 5-year period. But can you look at the straight linear graph which shows the gap level? These two don't speak to each other. Surely they have. There was bound to be a problem in the long run. Effectively, if you look at it, either the staff complement is stagnant or even going down in some instances. This is just a summary of the cases of misconduct. You know, the pie shows which areas that are of concern to us. It helps us with information because we're beginning to do organizational staff survey to find out exactly what are the reasons for instance, financial misconduct, what are the reasons for insubordination, because it speaks to discipline within the organization. We are going probably to see an increase in this current financial year, as I indicated earlier on. We are dealing decisively with most of wrongdoing, but we're hoping to stabilize in the next few years, because I think there is an emerging new culture and also the culture of commitment in the organization. In terms of the equity employment, this is the structure. We are not doing very well when it comes to equity. It's an area that we are part of the human resource plan that we are focusing on. In fact, we're almost close to a point where we really want to say there are certain categories of our demographics that we really would like not to appoint anymore because we're too many in certain areas. Especially when you look at gender equity, we're still struggling there, especially at the executive level. It's an area that we are addressing with the board. In terms of financial information, this is the last part of the presentation. I'm hoping that I'm not doing so badly on time. It's not going to be taking long care. The ratio or the split between spending on core business as well as admin or operation, if you like, is a 70-30 split, which is not very, very bad. And if you look at the numbers, it's 265 million in 2015 that we spent on the core business and 113, which, by the way, that 113, we need to bear in mind that when we talk supply chain, effectively supply chain forms part of core business of ICT. Because all the programs that we manage for the department department must go through a process, and we have to be very, very strong in that regard. In terms of cost containment measures, I think we've seen a very positive impact of the cost containment measures. This is still some of the measures that the President announced so now. In fact, at ITT, we've already started implementing, you know, including the issue of business class travel, the number of delegations to various events. We have been able to manage that. In some instances, our savings were more really to do not with cost containment, but largely with the vacancies that we had. But we have embarked on a process now filling most of those vacancies. As you can see in this slide, our salary costs were budgeted at 278 million. We spent 212 in that financial year. And again, there were some vacancies that we created. As I indicated, the transition and the transformation process did have some sort of impact. But that presidency is now gone, and the board has given a go-ahead for filling of critical posts, which is a process that we've embarked on the better part of last year. We also budgeted about 15 million, and we spent a bit higher on consultancies. This is largely linked to a number of experts that we have appointed, you know, to deal with a lot of litigation issues that we deal with on core business. And it's a matter of focus in our turnaround strategy, the area of litigation. Travel costs, we are much comfortable. We stick far within the budget of 38 million. And then also, if you look at things like rental costs, we actually stayed quite well within the budget. In terms of management fees bill, we actually were very comfortable on average of 5.9% collection rate, which is 376 million we collected from program spend of 2.7 billion. That's the target that is pretty much within what we would like to achieve, because we actually charge management fee on a sliding scale. So the more smaller project, you find the project management is quite high, but the mega projects we touch at a low rate. That will be your high cost and others. If you look at the recovery rate as of 31st March, we are not very happy with the recovery rate. I must be honest, if you look at the outstanding balance as of 31st March of 2005 and balance at year end of 2010, there's been an increase. We also applied a provision of double debt, that's 53 million, which the AG was not happy about. A number of these will, in my view, be irrecoverable. We have embarked on a process of engaging all the DGs, all the HODs, and CFOs to make sure that we clean up this to ensure that we get the accurate amount that is recoverable. Then the next phase would be to engage government directly in terms of the appropriate platform to ensure that we do get collection. Most of the people we already started working with, especially officials within government, are very, very willing to assist us in terms of joining the conciliation of the balances of spending. Part of this is linked to the historical challenges of incomplete program reforms, which the AG cited in the reports. But it is our priority area. But also, there was a contributive effect when the new basis note in 2014 was rolled out. There was not adequate consultation so that people understand how the new billing model of ICT is about. So at least now we are working on those issues. In terms of the going concern, We are not very much worried about the concerned contracts. Obviously, as I said, the more we actually align our work and ensure our funding model is more certain, at least we will be more comfortable with the going concern barometer. In terms of our investment fund, we have 6.7 million at the opening of the year. We have also IDT bank balances that were worth about 47.4 million, which gives us a total short-term funding of 104. Our investment, all of them are not long-term. This is more liquid investments, which can be converted to cash in a very short space of time. However, the way we deal with IT bank balances in terms of operational accounts, we manage it and monitor it on a continuous basis. We also consult with the board from time to time in terms of giving feedback on the cash flow situation. Our average monthly operating cost is about 31 million. We will convert to plus minus 300 and something million, maybe 340 million per annum. And the number of months funded is 3.6. I think later on we have improved quite a lot there. I think now we're sitting at almost about 5 months, which is quite positive. And I wouldn't like to talk much about the last indicator because it actually includes the entire book debt, which is, in my view, not giving us. It looks very healthy to say 14.2 months, but knowing that we still have to reconcile a lot of recoverable debt, I would rather stick to the limit indicator, which is your asset test for now. In terms of the consultancy cost, this is just a big breakdown for information. Yes, I think in conclusion and in terms of recommendations, we've highlighted here some of the key enablers and also inhibitors for the high performance for IDT. And I indicated, I will just look at the indicators. I think the transformation process has now got traction, and we're more or less going to wrap up this process. We've already got the indication from the department of what schedule ICT would be going forward. So that I can mention that here. But as you know, IDT currently is a Schedule 2, listed in the Public Finance Management Act. The work that was done over about 6 months last year indicated that we should be appropriately scheduled as a 3A. Initially, we also had an evaluation of the possibility of a government component, but the way IDT does its business across the 3 spheres of government, we were going to have challenges with regard to government components, especially when it comes to legal papers and so on. I've spoken about the issue of delays in transfers of money, but we're looking at best models. There are provinces that are giving us money on time, and also we have agreed on effective governance arrangements around that. So we will roll out the best working models in terms of the transfer of funds to IDT. And I indicated the issue of business portfolio and uncertainty around it. And until the time that we are, finding a model that is the best for government, essentially, we will be able to look into that. The continuing high turnover of staff, we deal with this matter, but personally, where I'm sitting, I am of the view that in instances where, in the absence of any better way to say people are leaving for having done wrongdoing, probably school students, I think we should start on a new slate. But we are really worried where we lose critical staff in core areas. And we are part of our turnaround strategies to look at a retention strategy that's going to deal with those matters. Hence also, we're reviewing our remuneration framework models and so on, which we will engage the minister on as soon as we have finalized that. There are different risks. I've highlighted the risks here. The first one, as I said, is now moderate. It's no longer a high risk. It was a high risk before. But I think progress has been made in terms of the continuation of the mandate of IDT. The terms of loss of client business portfolio is still a worrying factor because IDT had to be sustainable going forward. But we are taking measures. We also had been given a portfolio by the Department of Public Works. which is also going to affect ITP in the interim period. But also we are making headways in getting new business in different provinces. As I said, the concept of certainty and fluidity is still really a concern. I think the last one is something we are going to take the chair head on. It's not negotiable. We don't want to come to this committee again talking about financial management issues. We must come to this committee talking about issues of program delivery and also issues relating to the core mandate of the organization. So the issues of governance, issues of financial management, I think are just a distraction in the two sense. So we're making a serious commitment to deal with that. Some of the matters for the attention of the portfolio, just to catch a few, is to look at the issue of portfolio allocation, as I indicated, which will affirm viability of IDT. We're also focusing on the turnaround strategy. My take is that we will be able, I think I'm speaking on behalf of the Board of Trustees, to give progress to the portfolio committee on where we are with this, because it's a critical work that we are doing as IDT to ensure that we've got a vibrant organization. And also the area of education, we are handling it head on, so that we can, unfortunately what we are dealing with now is contracts that we signed far back 3-4 years that are coming up. People are raising this and that issue. It's about contractors that were not performing and they were then terminated and they are coming back. They want to go to court, some of them. Some is relating to some disputes that were never resolved, but we want to clean up that so that we start on again late. The transfer of funds, I think there for me is more critical when it comes to impact on the service providers, especially the fellows who will struggle if they are not paid, who might just go down or close shop. We're really working on this with both the IDP, National Treasury, as well as the Department of Public Health, so that we find a solution. Lastly, the funding of community mobilization and empowerment is an area we believe, and the Health Treasury has given us some kind of a positive response there to say this is not an area IDP is making money on, but also it's a very critical task of community facilitation or social facilitation and community mobilization. So they indicated that there might be some consideration of some line item baseline funding to us, but they've asked us to make a critical motivation in that regard. But I also mentioned that part of the motivation we put to Treasury is also including some funding elements of the critical turnaround strategy, especially when it comes to systems development and integration, as well as training and development. That is the area that I think we will be talking to Treasury about. Our the last component was just the our own building in ITT, which has been condemned by the experts. We're looking at about 69 million that we will require in order to put it back into a habitable situation. Chairperson, honourable members, the recommendation is for the noting of the annual report of the IDT and also the IDT's areas of under and over achievement, and also the progress made within confirmation of the IDT mandate and the business case, and lastly the turnaround plan that has been put, which is a 3-phase plan put up by the board. In closing up, Chair, I just want to mention that there is a document, I hope it has been circulated by the one pager, that we would like your guidance on. When we were taking the annual report, the AG highlighted just a few minor corrections that were critical. I think the most ones was just the referencing of the actual audit report. It had Roman figures and some in two pages and some ABC, which the AG wanted us to remove. We have done so, but we would like to get the permission of the chair if they are adopting the annual report so that we can maybe on those pages print the correct, the version of the AG that looks much better. other ones, it was just rounding errors. If it's a zero and a one on the financials, it's not material changes. It's only audit report 882 and 883. Those Roman numerals and on the basis of disclaimer and also the 1, 2, 3 Roman figures, the AG report will remove. And then on page 83, it was item 14 or that 83, just on the subheadings. And on page 84, there was something relating to alignment. It's just the certification of that paragraph. It was only that paragraph on the report. So those were the, just as I thought, drawing the attention of the committee would be critical. On that note, person and honorable members, I'd like to thank you very much on behalf of the board and also the deputy minister. Thank you.
Chief Executive Officer, thank you for your overview. I'm going to avail the opportunity to members to pose questions and make their comments. I would just like to say that obviously the issue of the disclaimer is the serious one that the entity needs to address. In your contribution, you also made mention that your predecessor was dismissed, and also earlier on you also mentioned that there are a number of people who are resigning from the organization. Now the issue is that also you made mention that you are taking people to task. For the purposes of the committee, it would be important to clearly articulate what do we mean we are taking people to task. If people are resigning because investigations are being commenced, what are we doing? Where we suspect criminal activities, are charges being laid? If so, how many cases have been taken up in such a manner? And then also, I think the committee would also require more information. It does not suffice to say that the former CEO was dismissed. Why? What were the issues? What is the follow-up beyond that dismissal? If there was criminal activity there, what are we doing about that? So we need to find out more about what you are doing to give force to some of the actions that you are saying that are taking people to task. That term, unfortunately, it's too a generic term. We need more detail so that where members of the portfolio need to follow up, to assist you, to ask relevant questions, they should be privy to the relevant information. The other issue that I'm sure members will also raise, from your contribution, sir, you also correctly reminded us that IDT has been in this process of the turnaround strategy for the past 7 years. 7 years is a very long time. And then you also say that the current turnaround strategy, or the updated one, will take us another 5 years. So there you are speaking about quite a number of years, and the last 5 years you've said that there are short-term issues and slightly longer term. But for this, for the purpose of the committee, we'd also need to unpack that. Members of Parliament will soon be going to elections in 3 years or 2 years' time, and then some of the issues are escalated to the next Parliament. They won't be here. So we have to do our oversight responsibility, focus on the areas or on the years that will still be here. But I'm sure that I'm just giving, making my preliminary remarks based on the very informative contribution that you have made. But I'm sure that members will engage in the contribution that was made by yourself and the opening remarks made by your chairperson. I've noted to members, I'll commence with Honorable Paula Barnett, She will be followed by Honorable Fultani, and then Honorable Sifole, and Mayor Matia.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I couldn't agree more with your remarks. I haven't been this shocked in some time. There was a claim at the end there of successes and the sides put up, but we can't get past the fact that this is a disclaimer of opinion. It's the worst possible outcome in terms of the Auditor General's investigations, the worst possible one. Now, the performance has actually declined from a qualified audit opinion, and now the Auditor General has simply can't find sufficient audit evidence. Frankly, this entity, I believe, has reached a stage where it's time to call in the SIU. The Auditor General simply can't determine whether or not massive multi-million rand adjustments were necessary, inadequate controls of invoices. You bet the list is catastrophic. Of course, the goal is to achieve an unqualified audit opinion. That should be the goal. You're going backwards as an entity. There are staff whose close family members are benefiting from contracts. That's just one of the many, many issues raised, from crooked tenders to material misstatements. So it's a massive problem. I would have expected to hear that there had been 30 arrests and there were 30 criminal cases. As you said quite rightly, Chief Financial Officer, he was fired in December. Is he going to pop up in another department? Are the other 30 or 20 that have suddenly resigned, presumably facing disciplinary hearings, are they going to pop up in another department and land another cushy job? That is, of course, a major issue. I'd like to know who's being held to account for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, bearing in mind that the increased amount stems from the 70,000 from last year. It's exactly the same issue of non-payment of the same items, and here we go, it's now trebled. That hardly fills one with confidence of the management. I've got many questions, but I'll just ask one more. Talk to me about what you refer to as doubtful debts. 37.1 million of them. Who was behind signing off on the contract which landed you with those debts, which will presumably not be recovered? And would this amount relate to what must surely be criminal actions by your staff that you have obliquely referred to? Again, have those who have been involved in landing your division in this appalling situation, have they been arrested and charged?
Honourable Member, thank you very much. I must just correct the mistake that I made in my opening remarks. I referred to the dismissal of the CEO, whereas it's the Chief Financial Officer. Honourable Rutan.
Thank you, Chair. I thank you for giving such a comprehensive report at the end of the financial year. We appreciate the frankness with which the IDC has approached the matter. It really does enable us to make a critical appraisal of what's been going on, and to, more importantly, to be able to advise where we can, and to the extent that we can, what the way forward should be. IDC is a special purpose vehicle, and one expects certain specific consequences from this intervention, school program being the main one. But you still find a number of schools where kids are schooling under raw weather elements. Time and time again, I would speak for the Eastern Cape, at least you find kids in schools. Do you sometimes reprioritize your budget to say, whereas we've programmed ourselves to build so many schools and such places, but when it makes sense, you find that in areas like Davangulu and Mount Frey, you know, where those areas are very, very vulnerable when it comes to storms and the like. Do you have a policy whereby you would say, let's divert, you know, funds, you know, mid-year in order to cater for emergencies of that nature? Let me come to the more detailed part of it on. Transition for 5 years. Let me direct this question to the department itself, the parent. Do you, Deputy Minister and your department, have a specific date by which you would say the issue of the transitional stage of the IGT will be completed? Because if you don't have a specific date, you're just relying on, you know, on day-to-day operations. Here we have got an organization that reports that in 2009, they had a staff complement of 440. That has since shrunk to 355 or thereabouts. And we are now on another parliamentary session, and it looks like we're going to go for the 2019 elections again, still in this limbo. The future of the potential beneficiaries of the IDT programs hangs in the balance. And that's why I'm putting this question as to whether you have got a date for which you would say, IDT, your transition stage, you know, status must be done. That would help a lot. Not only the staff members, not everything, not everybody else, but specifically the potential beneficiaries. Now, the perhaps elements of fraud or simple lack of capacity for the disclaimer. I've seen the, you know, the reason that you have. I'm looking at the reason that you have advanced for the final dismissal of the CFO. Now, in law, there is what is called the causal chain. He may have failed to deliver, and as such, in terms of employment policies, all that you would feel capacitated and, in fact, legally obliged to do is to dismiss one to reach a certain stage in your deliberations with the range what he was expected to. But what if he investigates whether his failure to deliver the goods has led to people who are serving under him to see a gap whereby they committed fraudulent acts? We would like to get a specific report on that is this committee. It is possible that because he turned his head away and people working in his department saw that this person cares less and that opened a gap again. That is an indirect contribution to the commitment of a crime when you had a fiduciary duty to perform. Can you please give us a report on that specific time, whether you have investigated that element? I know it could take a little bit of time. I know he's out of the department, but the arms of the law is long enough to catch up with him. Our colleague here, Colabana, has indicated that there's a strong possibility he could pop up somewhere. Would you have a policy whereby if you dismiss a person on these reasons, then they should not be employed here to come and say it's got at least another 5 years? That would be quite a strong deterrent. It's very serious when it comes to CFOs, and you see, oh, they hold a lot of power. And as such, they can persuade the effectiveness of an institution that they have. We have such a policy. If not, why not? You know? So specifically, I request that you investigate the effects, long-term effects, of his dereliction of duties. Dismissing him is far from being sufficient. This has got, you know, very, very bad consequences for the community. Number three, or still on that point rather, I would say we commend the fact that, you know, the department, the institution for having gone as far as it did, which has said in this point. Now, on your turnaround strategy, you say you are now going to operate like a typical business entity. Now, are you going to put more emphasis in your employment policy on people who display previous business experience when you are going to employ them? Or are you just going to do like before, if that's where you were? To say, okay, he's got a vehicle, he's got this smart degree, qualifies. Some countries put a lot of emphasis on actual relevant experience because if you're just going to get people who know that I've been with the Department of Finance, with this department and that department, I've got 15 years experience in government service, those people know all about business. Those are not the people you're looking for. They know bugger all about business. Absolutely nothing. All they know is paperwork, the right thing. That's all they know. Get people who have been in business if you are going to operate as a business. Actual business qualifications, you know, are tertiary, are an add-on. That's my suggestion, like I indicated, you know, in my opening remarks. Substitute the word create
on bullet point number 4, there's a page where in your 10-hour strategy you say create and sustain. That stands for me a message to say you have not previously created. If you say you want to create, creating is about something new. I would rather suggest that you say strengthen rather than say create, because that sends a wrong message. And work opportunities, according to your report, that we created, are down by 40%. Any specific reasons for that? Now, this is now the impact, Honorable Deputy Minister, one of the impacts of an operation, of operations by an institution that is in limbo for over 5 years. It cripples, you know, their effectiveness, you know, on the community they are supposed to benefit. Here, the work opportunities down by 40%, you know, only 60% achievement. That's quite a big gap in this environment that we're operating in South Africa. School, every month, only 84% success. That's where we would expect you to go even more overboard. Organizational challenges. Insubordination and financial misconduct. Those are human-driven factors. Somebody sits there and decides, look, I am not going to submit to the authority that be. I am not going to handle the finances of the IDT strictly according to prescript. That's an attitude now, see. And that accounts for over 50% of the way in which people behave within the institution. This drives one inevitably to the conclusion that governance and management within the IDT right at the top needs to be tightened. My take is that perhaps we are too soft, I'm afraid. You need to tighten. How does a person decide to be insubordinate if they feel they cut their job and in primary importance to save their bonds and the like? You should be able, as the employer, should be able to deal with those people very simply and very quickly. 6 months is too long if a person is insubordinate. There are many people who are looking for jobs out there. We cannot, as a government, repair that kind of behavior, staying with their financial misconduct, you know. Lastly, the question of slow transfer of funds from the beneficiary departments. You do jobs, work on behalf of the Ground of Education. Now, when I submit my invoice to IDT, only then to ask for funds from education, and they take as long as they are comfortable to handle it. Deputy Minister, isn't there a possibility that this process could change around? I suggest we look at that. I don't know whether this is the case simply because perhaps IDT have not in the past demonstrated extremely well financial management. I don't know why that has got to be the case, because it really does. It's not long ago when in the Eastern Cape there was a big meeting of service providers, and the only complaint that they lined up for was slow payments. I am not saying that IDT was cited in that meeting as one of the contributors, one of the very specific, there's a particular department. But generally, departments rely on private entrepreneurs to do business for are extremely unhappy about the place. Let's find ways of eliminating that. In closing, Chair, what I've been looking for, the usual thing that I always look for, is a specific paragraph that says, all of this that we have been doing as IDG, 355 of us, has resulted in this specific socio-economic impact. I miss that from your report. To say it doesn't have a village, because now they've got a new school, schooling has improved, and so on and so on. This is what we're looking for. More employment was created because the social purpose data, made sure that, people were trained by the contractor and so on, and now they are able to run their businesses. That is the kind of socio-economic impact that ultimately the government we are looking for. May we, Chair, agree that they would still give us a supplementary report reflecting on that. We want to know how many jobs have been created, down
you know, vertically as well as horizontally as a result of IGC's, you know, an intervention. We appreciate the environment, tough environment in which we are operating. But that's my two cents of contribution to it all. I thank you for the opportunity.
Honorable
Sir,
I'm not sure if the minister means 2 cents. The denomination are no longer seeing the need. thank you, sir. Baba Scott.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I must thank you, the department and the presenter from the IGT. But Chairperson, first of all, something that I want to affirm from the IGT, because it is like they are doing cut and paste. If you look at the measure already initiated to remedy the situation, the CFO is currently on suspension for the deletion of duties. Among others, this disciplinary hearing scheduled to take place this month.
This month, they talk about November. Now we are in February. Doesn't make sense, Chair.
They are in February now. If they meet him on December, they are supposed to
fix this.
And the other one, Chairperson, is one of women. There is a death strategy already for one. Approximately the value of contract awarded women. And then the other one is the percentage of women contractors participating in CDT.
Is it just give us some numbers? Because
it doesn't make sense. Actually, sometimes it's just a duplication of what's here. And the other one, Chairperson, is the one of...
where possible, could you kindly also just remind the members of the House of the pages that you are referring to?
There's no page.
If there are no numbers, so that
there's no
number. Or if there's a heading, you can point them to, for them to know what you are referencing. So,
the heading is overview of performance, traffic of the people one.
Thank you, sir.
And now, Chairperson, when it comes to their recovering exercise, what I want to understand from them is the skill transfer. Do they have a team for the skill transfer? Because most of the time they are doing construction in different provinces and in different cities. They transfer skill after they finish their construction. And the other one is transformation. They are talking about transformation. If they can actually extend or either tell us if they are talking about transformation in IGT, what does that mean? And they have 91 vacancies in IGT, 91. How long does that be, and when are they going to fix, or either when are they going to fill up those positions, because just 91 are about the position that's supposed to be in the IGT. And other one, Chairperson, is that one of investing, because according to their report, they invested approximately 10% of the opportunity expenditure in the country. What I want to find out, what was the terrible outcome of those investments? Did they have the outcome of this, all that investment, Chairperson? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of I think member collaborative person on it, that their staff, they have a private business interest in awarding the contractor to other contractors, because if they do have that, they are contravention of the Section 50 of the PMFA. What steps have they taken? Have been taken by the IGT. And the other interpretation is that one of I just hear what the clarity answer, because the contractors, most of the contractors have been expired in this entity. There is a route if you can get out there. Why the contractors are not being renewed? If they have renewed, how many have been renewed? And the last one, Chairperson, is the one of
put the disclaimer. Chairperson, I'm not convinced. If they say they have developed a detailed plan to achieve the unqualified. In 2013, 2014, 2015, the same target was there. Even now they have the same target. 2015, 2017. Whereas they achieved disclaimer instead of achieving unqualified. What is the difference now? What system do they have now to achieve that? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much for your contribution. Mayor Masiela, Mutompe Iguena,
you know. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation from the IDT, which was comprehensive and also very, very clear. And at the same time, they try to be very, they're trying to be very, very honest with their report. You know, it's very important that if you know exactly where the problems are, you are able to show them and you are able to report about them, then it's going to be easier for one to be able to address some such issues. One of the issues that I wanted to talk about is the issue of the number of women who are being employed. They did mention it. We must have sort of a strategy on how you are going to address this issue. You have identified it, but what are you going to be doing to make sure that you address it, to make sure that you are biased in whatever you are doing to make sure that at the end of the day, this issue, we don't have it again. Honorable Sitola did touch about the issue of the vacancies. 21% of posts are vacant, which is almost a quarter. This is too much. And at the same time, that is where they are saying they created less than 35,000 jobs. A big enemy of this government is lack of jobs for people. So if we're going to have so many vacancies that are not filled, when we're saying we've got many people that are unemployed, what are we actually doing? It means we're not really assisting the government. So we must have a way of making sure that all these positions that are vacant, they are being filled, and also where we are creating less, where we are supposed to be creating more, we address that. It would be better if we say we're able to create more by so much, but not the same. 5,000 is too much. Please just go and address that one also. Can we have a strategy how we are going to address the whole thing? The issue of invoices that are being submitted late by the contractor and other people you are working with. Remember that if that is done by them being submitted late, at the same time it's going to impact on you, because you are not going to be in the position to meet your target. What are we doing as the entity to ensure that these people, they see the need, or they realize that it is very important that they submit on time and also correct information when they submit? What are we doing to assist these people that we are working with to ensure that they submit on time, they submit the correct issue, and also they pay the people that they are working with? Because that's another problem. The people who are working under the contractors that we have hired, or the contractors that are working under us, they are not paid on time, or at times they are not even paid for months, because they will always be saying, IDT has not paid us. That is what is actually happening down there on the ground. So what are we doing to try to close all this gap? Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Hier al agbare Adams, dat ik me misgis of het ik jou aangezien.
Tjere, zo is het definitief misgis, maar ik zal speler en arm bijzooi. Dank je, dear persons. I want to thank the IDP for the presentation. However, it would have enabled us to do better discussions if it was numbered. if it was more client-friendly with regard to the color of the presentation, Jefferson? No, it isn't very, very friendly from my perspective. And Jefferson, I really hope that we have two women presenters from the IDTA that will also take part in the discussions, because we can't have homebodies here without participating in the process. Mine is just a technical one, Jefferson, because you have covered us with your input. And I'd like us to go to the introduction. In the introduction, the presenter said the IDT has been in transition for the past 5 years. Now, the past 5 years says to me, if my math is correctly, from 2010 onwards. But, Jefferson, the very next page, basis for the disclaimed audit, after 11 consecutive unqualified opinions spanning from 2002 till 2012. That means the transition was ongoing since 2010, and 2012 they also had unqualified opinions. What went wrong? Because from 10 to 12 had unqualified opinions, and the transition was from 2018. What went wrong? Then Chairperson, they say that they have something of 500%, I think, the workload increased. I can't get the page now. But, you know, Department of Treasury has a technical assistance unit. And if IDP struggled with regard to technical assistance and with regard to human resource, the first point of entry should have been the Department of Public Works. Not so, then Treasury. And Jefferson, if they say the clients don't pay on time, we have measures, 30 days, that is what they said, 30 days, what happened about 30 days? They might be like a child and go to Treasury and say, listen here, this department isn't paying. Scroof it up, onto the field with it, and let it rock being so before us. And then the chairperson, EDWP, EDWP also, or EDWP, and dunk the unbidden for us, further and further, and they'll see outcome 7, and it's kept vibrant rural communities. Who skipping it? And for whom is that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CEO. The last comment was that with regard to the extended public works program, mentions made in regard to rural areas, exactly where and how are we succeeding, and what are the challenges there. I think this is an appropriate time to have a rejoinder from the department, from the officials in regard to the issues raised by members of parliament and comment made, with the purpose of obviously assisting the entity and assisting the department where we can as parliament or members of parliament. Deputy Minister, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This will be a Tuesday contribution and probably worth much more. But let me begin, because obviously the CEO and his team, I think, will be a much better place than myself to give detailed responses to the detailed questions. In particular, the Honourable Phil Carney, but a number of other members also hinted at the role and responsibilities of the Department of Public Works, and I think appropriately so. So I'd like to address it. But if I could just begin with a very quick and rather amateurish recall, which I think most members, but perhaps not all members of the Portfolio Committee, there's a brief history of the IDT, I think, in order to try to situate the challenges that we're dealing with. I think we've done this before, but not necessarily in the presence of all of the current members. Basically, the IDT was set up as an independent developer trust. And the idea was that it would live off the interest and operate off the interest of that trust fund. The strategic objectives of the apartheid regime was really to create a black buffer middle class. I mean, to give an accurate political description of what it was trying to do. So it was not a comprehensive approach, but it was a kind of agency that they set up nominally independent of government, which would then do a number of interventions to try and create a kind of black middle class that they assumed would be sympathetic in particular political directions to themselves. And so that's what was inherited after 1994, the IDC. I think 2007, and I'll be correct, there was a cabinet decision to change, to recognize that the trust fund was now no longer operable. It was living from hand to mouth, basically, on work that it was soliciting out of a variety of departments, including the Department of Public Works, a range of other departments, basic education, health, and so forth. But it was a very arbitrary arrangement. It continued to be called an IDT. So the idea was that it should cease to be a NGO, basically, and function as a public entity in some form. Okay. So the transition that we're talking about, in many senses, goes back even to that period and longer than the 5 years that we're talking about. Then about 5 years ago, so I think that's where we got there's then a growing sense of urgency and concern about the financial sustainability, or even should continue to exist. So there was a debate going on in government about the appropriateness of the IDT, should it continue to exist, how should it continue to exist, and so on. Because it was increasingly, and then the last couple of years, it's had to rely on treasury transfers. Basically starvation diet, but basically just to kind of keep it going. And the debate around what form it should take, you know, what we're referring to as the business case, went back and forth. And I think certainly we as the Department of Public Works, and including the Ministry and the Department of Public Works, will take some responsibility for not moving as fast and efficiently as we should. So let me say up front, they were a little bit gentle about that, and I think that's appropriate. But we haven't moved as quickly as we should have. For a number of good reasons, but the good reasons are not excuses and shouldn't be excuses. I think it's important to say that. But what form should we take? So one version was just as with the property management trading entity, which looks after the core function of this fund, namely its property portfolio, we should we not develop another government component, like a BMTE, which would be responsible for program and project management of our construction side of things. So there was a strong feeling that could be a direction to take. However, the problem with doing that would be, what would then it be, if it was a government component, what would its relationship be with other government clients and departments? And indeed, even the private sector for that, because they've also worked, as you mentioned, and we would like to see them work more. With Vodacom, I mean, to use that example, the mining houses and so on, around the crisis on the settlement belt in terms of human settlements and so forth. I think there's lots of possibilities and we need to explore. So we've gone back and forth, and we'll come and report more fully together with our colleague from IDP about what now we settled on. So we think that it needs to be a Schedule 3A, but with a particular description. So we would use it as a Department of Public Works as our preferred program and project manager. And we know that we've got weaknesses in that sector, that we underspend consistently in our capital spend and our projects. And so we lack capacity. And rather than developing a parallel capacity, let's use this entity, which answers to the department, as our preferred kind of, so we're not waiting for that business experience. Already, as the colleagues have indicated, we are now throwing a lot of our business to them, business that we get from basic education or whatever. We're now seeing a significant proportion of that to go to them. So that's given them some confidence, which I think they're reflecting, that we are committed to sustaining them. We see them having capacity and potential capacity, which would help us as a public way. We're not trying to, through minute encourage provincials of the public works to follow through, but we can't expect them to do that because obviously, you know, and so some provincial departments are very keen to use and already do use IT. Others have a more skeptical view for a variety of reasons, sometimes because of poor performance and there's a range of reasons and so on. But we would like to encourage that and we're trying to do it. But we also need, and that's what the Schedule 3 enables us to do, enables them also to get the independency of National Department of Public Works and even Provincial Departments of Public Works and to contract directly with other public sector entities and perhaps even with the private sector. So that's the week we go. Okay. So we apologize because we know that this debate going back and forth in terms of by transition we're talking about is basically what organizational, institutional, and legal form should it have. And mea culpa, we have for many complicated reasons have not moved effectively. So what are the timelines? Well, we've got to bed that down in the administration. But while we're trying to bed it down legally, and sometimes, as we know from our expropriation bill, sometimes these legal, although this shouldn't be that complicated, let's begin to operate in any way, in that way. So let's not wait for the legal formality to move in the direction. And that's the confidence that we're trying to instill. And I think that as a result of that, and of course was reported by CEO, and I think briefly mentioned flagged by the chair of the board, that there's retention of staff now, because apart from the bad apples that we're leaving, and they will answer what happens to bad apples, you just let them go, or do we charge them? They need to answer that correctly. But we were also losing good people who were getting frustrated and uncertain about the career prospects and so on. So we think that that's starting to turn around, and also there's new managers. I think that's all across and important. Okay, so going on and on, but we will talk about that more when we come back to the committee specifically on the issue. Then let me come to the audits. I suspect, and maybe the colleagues, and particularly the chair of the board might be able to say, so 11 consecutive years of unqualified audits, and then suddenly after what the entire of the blue, a disclaimer, so from being very good, apparently, to being very bad. Okay. I suspect that the qualifications were called for long before. Okay. And I think, so I'm not pointing at, I'm not pointing at the Auditor General. The Auditor General had his hands full with us, the National Department of Public Works, which was getting qualifications and then eventually the plan. So I think a lot of the attention when it came to the public works family was here's the IDT I don't think the Auditor General drilled down with the degree that had studied this. And that was partly because maybe we started to not perform perspectively while we got an unqualified audit finally as the department. I think some of the attention then shifted to them, and I think correctly exposed, I think, serious problems which need to be addressed. So I think the Honourable Kalani, I think we need to appreciate it. 11 years of unqualified men, suddenly a massive drop, had partly to do with us drawing the attention, and we need to draw the attention of the Auditor General of the department that was really a serious problem with levels of corruption and so on, which far surpassed the 12 or so that have been detected and problems that have been detected in the Department of Public Works. Then just to conclude very quickly, to make a few related ones, I think that we, let's be critical, all of us, where required and appropriate, so that there's a significant asset and resource here. And I think the Honourable Fulton in particular underlined that point, and I think correctly so. I mean, indication that their book, their project book program basically has grown by 500% is an indication that the state in South Africa needs this kind of capacity. Okay. Which is, we know that across government there are weaknesses in program and project management in construction. And so we desperately need to build this, hold on to what we've got, not let it drain out. It's really very, very important. And we're encouraged by the growth of the book, and they've sustained that book with a staff level of the flat line, as they correctly indicated. So we've really got to address that. And perhaps the very fine point, and I really can correct me, but I heard the chair in previous occasions saying this, to share the picture of the buildings there are buildings, but you said that the Sundance buildings are the city buildings and don't actually have the direct impact. As far as we know, the vast number of things that IET has delivered using its core, not just its program management capacity, but its community involvement and participation capacity. As far as we know, not a single one of their buildings has been damaged, burned, or destroyed in township service delivery process, unlike many others. So that social facilitation role is absolutely critical. And so, like I said, there's the Auditor General's report, which we take seriously, and we are, as the committee, sitting at the department. But then there's also the popular audit, if you like. And because of the role, and it's something that I think we want to really develop, really the germ, you know, of that capacity. That we see as it's not just the weaknesses that we've got in government generally in program managing social infrastructure, it's in facilitating community involvement, participation, so the community own the library, they don't burn it, they have a sense that it's helped to build it, they have a role in maintaining it, looking after it, and so on. So, so critical, and that's certainly also the direction. So we think that the popular order so far, unless we've missed something, is good, okay, with all the challenges we've got. But I'd like to thank particularly the Honourable Silvani for correctly saying that some of the questioning mustn't go to IDT, it must go to us. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Chapter 6.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I also thank the Deputy Minister because some of the questions are on issues which are beyond our control. We could only assist, but we appreciate the fact that the Department has come on board. And indeed, the Deputy Minister is correct. The reconfiguration started in 2007. We would be the eighth year now of uncertainty, and we are hopeful and happy that it looks like it's going to come to an end. I just want to start with the question posed by the Honourable Caller Barnett by saying that indeed we are equally outraged by the audit outcome. Bruises our own professional standing. And as such, it is for that reason that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that we are not in the same space. I was in the same situation with SARA, by the way, where it went to a disclaimer precisely because we're investigating, and the period covered by the disclaimers was many years before we started, but we could not cut and run and say we're not responsible. We took responsibility. Here are some of the things that were not covered by the presentation, which we immediately effected to take responsibility, direct responsibility. The first one, IDT board, we said, in our conscience, we can't review our sitting fee on a year when you have such a negative adverse audit finding. We said freeze that process. The second one, we said for the senior executives, no bonus. And none was effected at senior level. Because we were saying we should, even though there may be individuals, take that collective responsibility and make sure that things are turned around. The other one is the fact that, as the CEO in the presentation had already indicated, the finance unit, particularly the CFO, there was a disciplinary action against him. One of the reasons is that many a times the matter of the Auditor General saying we're not getting enough assistance and immediate response was escalated to the level of the CEO and to the board itself to say we're not getting toy from the finance unit on some of the issues. I spent personally 2 days testifying before the DC, and we won that particular case. And the outcome was that the CFO should be dismissed and some of the monies be recovered. So that to us is consequence management. And there are others, of course, where the follow-up is taking place. The other thing that has been taking place that we reported last year, we approached the Accountant General and the Treasury to say, we would like to pursue the bad guys who have committed financial misconduct, but we do not have all the money. So we invited Treasury to take over, and we said whether it's a board member or an executive or a low-level staff, action should be taken. That forensic investigation is full speed, and we hoping to bring that report back to this committee, hiding no facts and hiding nothing. And we have raised the question, what happens to the people when they resign because the investigation is coming close to them? And they said they are going to assist us to pursue them wherever they are to make sure that public resources do not just diminish because people simply jump the ship. So the reason we may not have all the responses is because the investigation is ongoing and people's computers are being taken for scoping and so forth, and we said it should stop nowhere until we get to the bottom of the truth. So that one, I think, to us is very clear. We've taken action where we could. However, on the question that was raised by the honorable member of saying, are these people going to reappear elsewhere? I think it's a policy matter bigger than ITT, and we would support anything we say should somebody do something wrong. Let them be pursued and let them not gain any comfort anywhere in future.
I think it's for that very reason. I think that the name of the CFO of the discipline should be named here on record. That's one of the safeguards that we could invite.
Yeah. Thanks, DM. The CFO, the former CFO, should we say, was Ian Ellis. And it's on record, we've won, and there was a period for an appeal, he has not appealed, and we did take action. And we will be giving you other names as and when we take action. And we have called the staff meeting to say, we are on an anti-corruption drive, and it will not be tolerated wherever it is, because we're handling these public resources, but huge, you know, funds. One of the things that has really paralyzed us, because each time we wanted some information in order to exercise our fiduciary responsibility, the frustration of not getting that, particularly from the finance unit, was just way too much. Now, one of the things we've done has been a workshop with the Auditor General, because we said, we do not want to be managing Auditor General. We want to create a relationship and be assisted. We brought in all the managers. We went to the headquarters of the AG and had a workshop speaking specifically to the issues that we're trying to address and how to turn the situation around. And the CEO did mention that we have a special task team that is assisting us in the shortest possible period to turn the situation around. But now, I was happy that the DM also emphasized the fact that as much as we do have some areas of disclaimer, which had always been in place for years under the same AG, because we raised that question, same issues over the years which had unqualified audits, all of a sudden, boom. And I suspect that not only the Department of Public Works issues, but also the fact that we now were in a full forensic investigation. And I suspect no auditor would want the organization to self-report that we found so many irregularities. Then they went on, if you look at the thoroughness this time around, going to the same issues that date back some years, under the same AG. So that we raised as an issue, but we accepted the issues being found because they make us better going forward. Now, the issue of the performance, I think it's very important, as you saw the physical buildings being presented which have become iconic in different communities. That as much as on government level we have shown the weaknesses, but we have not stopped performing, delivering the goods as you saw in the display itself. So that balance to say that our mandate should be to deliver those buildings, the social infrastructure, but at the same time, very importantly, it should be within the realm of good governance. That we take note of and we take it seriously. The other one of the issue of reprioritization when there are emergencies that Honorable Filtane was raising, I think it's an important point, but we are only serving departments. If the department says we have this emergency, as it happened in KZN, when there were storms which destroyed the schools, KZN immediately made available emergency funds and they chose IDT as a preferred implementer of those programs. Within a short space of time, that was done. But again, during that period, because they were demanding a short turnaround, some issues, cautionary notes from the agency to say, in the process of trying to address that emergency, the deviations came so thinly close to raising concerns. So it's that kind of a dilemma that we have to deal with. Otherwise, any department which says we have this emergency, we normally respond. And I just want to raise yet another issue of the impact assessment. Precisely because of the uncertainty, and precisely because we've been living for 8 lean years of little finances, we took a conscious decision to close the knowledge and research unit to say let's only focus on core business, because that unit used to do studies on our models to do the impact assessment. Even the one of social facilitation, no department generally was funding it because they would say, what is that? We were taking it from our own reserves. When those were diminishing, we had to scale that down. But I would still appeal to all departments to actually replicate that program because it works well. It gives a sense of ownership for the community. Hence, people have not taken up to destroying those particular properties because they are part of the decision making to a greater extent. It would be tragic if for only technical reasons we said we wanted to do 50 schools, but as we do 50 schools, communities will just see bricks coming, no one talk to anybody, and we finish on target, but there is no sense of ownership, only to see them destroyed or vandalized. And the issue of that Ujob, Honorable Minister Sito, I'm sorry for raising the pen name, I'm not sure whether in Parliament that is you. the indigenous part of me sometimes stands up. I'm but the cut and paste, we've noticed that it's because we had made a submission when we were to come in, was it November? And that date was postponed. We had to change. We had to change. Otherwise, we've noted that we accept that indeed we should be talking about the past participle rather than the future in terms of some of the actions that we've taken. And the last point I want to make is that the issue of vacancies, because I do not want to leave it to the executive, I want to take ownership. When we were told by the auditor that you are left with 3 months of the money you have, you can't employ, you can't do anything, the board took a position to freeze appointments and said any new appointment in critical positions, you bring it to the board. So that is one of the reasons that we've seen the numbers declining. But now that the department has said we're going to give you some work, and that the mandate issues are assured, it's for that reason that we started opening up, because with the new Companies Act, they said, Should you employ people in recurring cost positions and only to be closed in 5 months, you could be held individually liable. So we were only doing a responsible thing, but knowing that it constrains the capacity of the entity itself. So it's the dilemma that we've had to live with for some time, not knowing what the next 6 months we're going to hold, but at the same time, working very hard to make sure that any information that was needed by Treasury or the Department, we provided it within a shortest space of time. Yes, indeed, we do have very strong, women who participate, and one is the chair of the audit committee, will speak to some of the audit issues. They hold us accountable. But of course, we would like to see more women in higher positions, and as such, we will be striving for that to be achieved. But again, as we come here, we decided to be brutally honest. That's why the head of the disclaimer would put it up front, not on page 17 or anything, because we knew that it had outraged us and we're taking steps to deal with it. We do not want to hide it. It's something we're ashamed of. And as such, we want to meet next time speaking a different language on these governance issues. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Even if it was on page 25, we would have picked it up. You may proceed.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and also my thanks to my leadership. I think the principals have covered all the strategic issues. Perhaps the chair indicated, Chair, with your permission, the chair of the board, there might be some input the chair of the audit committee may want to add before I just deal with. Perhaps the CFO will probably have some gaps on the questions around finances, issues of data and so on. But I think that the high level issues the chair of the audit committee might want to.
Thank you so much, and good morning to honorable. Firstly, I would like to appreciate that the portfolio committee members are appreciating our brutal honesty in presenting our report, and it is very comforting that it has been acknowledged and it has been very constituent. Probably the part that I wish just to emphasize, because I think the issues of disclaimer have been handled very well by the chairperson. But what I also would like to remind the portfolio committee is that in the previous year, when we were coming through for presentations, we did highlight just to address probably the issue of what are we doing with all this shenanigans that are actually popping up within the IDC that eventually directly or indirectly would have affected audit opinion that we are sitting with at the moment. We did highlight that we had embarked on forensic investigation, and at that particular point in time it was a preliminary investigation just to give us comfort that we are suspecting that there were things that were happening. And truly on the 1st of October 2014, as early as that, we had appointed a forensic investigative unit or company to assist us in the alleged irregularities around areas of contract management, governance of supply chain management for the period of 2013 to 2014. And unfortunately, only last year when we were supposed to come back with the report to give you a proper understanding as to what has actually transpired, we are never able to come through. But probably this is the time to indicate that the preliminary forensic investigation did come out, and it was reported to the board. And it hoisted about 10 findings ranging from non-compliance with governance to HR and conflict of interest issues. And that's the reason why the CEO, as well as the chair, they're alluding to some of the measures that have already been taken to address all those. The report carried various recommendations, but I would say the recommendations were mainly two-pronged.
in a sense that there were those matters that internal management could address and implement disciplinary action. And I need to indicate that at the Audit and Risk Committee, we are following up on a quarterly basis all those internal issues, line item by line item. We don't fluff around them or over them. They are addressed line item by line item to get an understanding as to what are we doing about it. And management, the process is still in progress because it includes disciplinary hearings. Therefore, those they take a little bit longer than the number of disciplinary that are actually taking place. Especially there are those that are subjected recommendations that subjected certain matters or issues that were raised by the process of education to FA2, which as the chairperson has indicated that we then confronted or then spoke or communicated to the National Treasury's Specialized Audit Services to assist in moving forward with this bigger investigation. And I need to indicate that on the 8th of February 2016, I'm sure, there was a full-blown deployment of forensic investigators into the various regions of the IDC. And as I've indicated, there is scoping and imaging of our computer that is actually happening, because we believe some of these activities are happening not just on white paper, they're happening on electronic systems, because there must be that particular communication. Mm-hmm. And needless to say that apart, over and above what the preliminary investigation has highlighted, we also use and depend so much on an effective system we have of the hotline. The hotline has actually gave us links. It is reporting day in and out. And we are taking some of those because they link to some of the preliminary investigation issues that have been identified. And those have been put as a plan of action and a scope of work for the forensic investigation. And we can commit ourselves sitting here that by the 30th of April 2016, we shall wish to share with you the findings of this major forensic investigation that is taking place.
Is the honourable member?
That was going to be my question, whether or not this would be tabled at this committee. Can we just make a note that it actually arrived on which date, ma'am, did you say?
The 30th of April. It's the date on which the final report of the forensic investigation would be issued to the IDC board. And in the next sitting of the portfolio committee, I would make sure that I keep you abreast of the results and how far are we into implementing the recommendations.
Thank you,
ma'am. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member. I think it is very clear now that we are all in the same boat. We are all committed to correcting the wrongs if there were any. But I think what is very, very important is to, I must say this, the level of cooperation and working together between the management and the board has improved significantly. And that has resulted in us being able to inculcate some new deals for our staff in terms of the understanding of the importance of compliance issues. We in fact going to roll out a change management program as part of the intervention we were talking about. Some of the questions were very, very specific in terms of what I'm doing with fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In fact, because I am chairing the risk management committee at IDT now, we have actually unpacked all the critical, there is a slide there when I referred to inhibitors, all the risk areas that are very, very critical for us. One of the major concerns for me when I actually joined IDT is the attitude of our clients, because if any of the irregular expenditure that is referred to in our report, it means it actually directly affects our client department. So we are dealing with irregular expenditure decisively in terms of in-depth investigation, because also clients are also expecting us to give feedback so that they can process through Parliament their own reports. With regard to fruitless and useful expenditure, there was a question raised. It's a non-negotiable one. In our policy, if we found that it was fruitless and useful, we recover immediately. So that is the stance that we take, that fruitless and useful expenditure, we recover. However, I must also emphasize the fact that where there is a company that has been found to have done wrongdoing, there are legal processes that we're pursuing. In some instances, we'll also institute civil claims so that we can recover our money. We've got a register that will keep all claims that we have against those companies, much as we also have a register of all claims against IGT. But we are working tirelessly to make that we implement more preventative measures in dealing with those matters. The CFO can talk about the issue, Chair, relating to DECA. There was an issue that was concerning one of the honorable members on the DECA, and I think also there was an issue about the issue of finding flows. Ms. Mukros, the Chair, with your permission. Just briefly.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Chair. We have recorded a provision for doubtful debts of 53 million. That is mainly due to the fact that we have disputes that came as a result of the introduction of the National Treasury Inspection, where we started charging our clients differently on a sliding scale. Some of the clients accepted that, some of them did not accept that. What we are currently doing, we are engaging with the client. We have already started with Northern Cape, where we were owed 25 million, and it looks like we're going to be writing off 3 million in terms of such disputes. And also, another reason for the provision is that some of the program recons were not acceptable in terms of reporting and also the accuracy as well. So we are looking into that. We are also individually looking at our debtors, because the auditors qualified us on the provision matter, because we took a position, a globular position. We didn't analyze debtors individually to assess the collectability of the amount that are due. One other issue that I'd like to touch on is the issue of the invoices that one of the honorable members raised. What we are doing, we are going to issue a communication before year end to encourage our suppliers to submit all the invoices directly to head office, because they've noted that some of the invoices are submitted but they do not reach head office so that payments can be effected. So we are going to issue that communication in the regions so that they can understand that head office wants those invoices by a certain date so that we can effect the necessary payment. Because currently as we are not really achieving the 30-day payment terms that is expected. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the last comment would be on the, I think there was an issue around our program delivery, especially the area on the shortfall in the job created. There was also a specific question on the Department of Education program. And what is our role in ensuring that those who are still living under trees and so on are addressed. Although we know it's a common issue, but we do work very closely with the department in terms of assisting those. The COO will just give quick comments, Mr. And also on skill transfer.
Chairperson and honorable members, thank you. The questions regarding reprioritization of budget raised by Honourable Sultana, for example, in relation to storm damaged and other urgent needs which happen in schools. I wish we were able to say we are able to reprioritize funding. We are actually not, more so because we act as an agent. So our clients would undertake the prioritization. We do, however, on behalf of communities, make representations to the various clients that we have, where we would plead based on what we observe on the ground to the clients to undertake such prioritization, but we have no power to do it on our own. The other question related to the transfer of funds to the IDD to enable prompt payment to service providers. This is an area we are spending much time working with the CIETB and the department on prompt
you know, payment of service provider regulations, key of which is the funds flow between the clients and the agencies. And we've made substantive submissions to the CIDB in this regard, and have been engagement with both the department and national treasury regarding ways to improve the funds flow. The other question related to the participation of women in the contractor development program. I think the report largely made reference to percentages. We've got about 110 CIDB participants, of which about 72 are women within the program. This program is one of the flagship programs, but has struggled particularly in relation to work allocation. Many of the provinces tend to focus on speed delivery and less on the empowerment side, but it's an area in which we continue to work with them. Skill transfer. We used to do more in this area than we're currently doing. When we had our resources from the erstwhile capital endowment, we were able to set aside the resources that would assist us to undertake interventions and skills transfer. We have increasingly been doing less and less as we've been struggling in terms of resources. In the business case that is being completed by the department, one of the areas which is critical is what is called community empowerment, which is an area that the business case highlights as an activity that must be funded. Key in that intervention is the empowerment of communities through skill transfer. So the skill transfer itself is embedded in our systems, but currently we're struggling with the funding until the business case addresses that gap. The same applies to job creation. The whole skills community empowerment component of our service profiling largely relates to job creation as well as to skills transfer. The last question, Chair, related to the contractors' renewal. I think there's been an observation. In fact, there's been an observation in our report that a number of contracts were not extended, and I think Honourable Member wanted to understand what are the reasons. We started about 3 years ago, I think as the chairperson highlighted, started to engage employees on a three-year basis linked to programs that we secured. So when those programs would expire, we would release those employees. There's been a balancing act of matching resources with the responsibilities of the organization, and that is largely responsible for some of the contracts not being extended. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My last word really is going to be to say there is a concerted effort to deal with the behavior of staff. The AG identified specifically about 4 categories of staff who are contravening our policies. One is direct employees who might have or were found to be doing business with ICT. The other category is officials whose associates are doing business with ITT, and the others relate to close family members and also companies that fail to declare the interest in terms of the supply chain rules. We have already issued communication with them. Some have asked for additional information, but clearly in some instances, which still links to the same question that was raised earlier about resignations, we will follow up where we have to recover. Some of those companies will ensure they get listed into the blacklisting by Treasury in the database. So we will explore all legal instruments to ensure that we deal with that. Lastly, the issue of the colors and the branding. We are relooking at branding. But no problem with those. We also find it in some instances very unuser friendly. In fact, before we came here, I was communicating with the Secretary saying, I am so worried the something will be chastised for his black and white copies that are not visible. Because if you try to print this in grayscale or black and white, you can't read it. I think bigger than that, once we have finalized the repositioning and the issue here, the business case, we are looking at possible change of name of IGT. So we are going to move very cautiously. But these are all immediate ones we can deal with. But also we are negotiating, I've been with the talks with the DG, looking at co-branding with the PW, because there are some advantages of doing that. For instance, communities, sometimes they don't even know with government. They actually are coming in when the PW fails. They send to IDT. They did not say thank you, government. So we're trying to make sure that does not happen going forward. But Chair, thank you very much for the support, and we will take the set of questions, if any.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I'd just like to make a comment or rather respond to a very important question that has been raised by Honorable Sithole regarding the plan to address the disclaimer. He seems to have given a discomfort. And I must say, you are right to feel that way, because ourselves as a committee, that's how we felt when we first saw the opinion of AA. But there are a couple of things that actually happened. At that time, we only had an interim CFO to look into this, and we were nearing the 2015-16 year end. And we looked at the significance and magnitude of effort that would have to be exerted to address those. We definitely were worried. But the moment we had appointed the CFO onto, we brought him on board, and together with the stand-in, having brought their heads together, they came with a very prolific and plan that is sufficient to address those. And maybe I need to explain that the understanding we have and the focus that the implementation plan addresses, it will address only those four matters. The plan is huge. It addresses from number 1 to 120. But the four that are causal factors to the disclaimer are the ones that the finance committee, the CFO, have committed to ensuring that by 2016, when we do the reporting, those would be addressed fully. And we have had a chance so far of looking into the plan and looking at the progress that has been made. And that's the reason why the CFO is sitting here and is able to indicate that we have piloted one of the regions just for project reconciliation to see how we're going to move forward with those, whether we are now in a state and able to roll it out to other regions. They are able to indicate that they have identified that the region was sitting at 25 million of debt with us, and have now agreed that the 3 million of debt will be written off because there were discrepancies, but we are sure the 21 million. And therefore, having looked at that progress moving forward, we are comfortable to say we would be able to, we may not be unqualified, but the key objective is to present an unqualified. But we are sure we're going to move from the stage of disclaimer into a better level.
Thank you, ma'am. I think Honorable Sitolia's discomfort to use the word that she used, and it did look very uncomfortable, emanates from page 113 of your annual report, page 133 rather. The question that you could ask or make him uncomfortable is that for 2013-14 we had a qualified report, but your chief financial officer received a bonus. So those are the issues that would not sit comfortably with the committee members. If you look at that performance, the individual concern, ultimately something happened. But for that year, when you had a qualified opinion, the man or the woman got a bonus. So such issues are of concern as we move forward. I would like to say that the report that we have been given, it deals with a number of the material issues that needs to be addressed. Members of Parliament have engaged those issues. I'm sure that the more questions, issues that members could raise, and there are more replies that you could in turn furnish to how you are dealing with some of those issues. But the importance of this type of engagement is that we will not interact with you once per year annually. But as members look at the issues that emanate from your annual report, we will engage with the entity in regards to those issues and the departments where there are overlapping issues in regards to the departments. Obviously, you are not responsible for policy, directives and issues. That's within the remit of the department. So we engage the department in regards to that, where there needs to be certainty. An organization cannot be in an interregnum for 7 or more years and expect that that entity should perform optimally. So those responsibilities will engage with the respective authorities, policy departments, as I said, but in regard to issues that relate to the entity itself, you can expect engagement for ourselves, and we'll call you to report where there's discomfort, but also where there are areas of excellence. We'll also acknowledge those, because we need to be fair. Where there's progress, where communities are happy with the work that you do, we need to acknowledge best practice so that other entities can also gain therefrom. So I would like to say that Deputy Minister, IDT, honorable members, thanks for your contributions today. I see that Honorable Fultani would like to sing the national anthem. I'll give you the opportunity. Proceed, sir. You want to raise something?
I would like to get a comment on what I suggested about the employment policy. Remember that I strongly suggested that we look at the qualifications for employment in a typically business entity. We should put a lot of emphasis on the qualification that reflects, you know, business experience. I know they can't prescribe employment policy now and so on, especially being trafficked, if you like, but I would like to get a comment, get a sense of what they think about this, you know. This would typically not necessarily come from the DM, as from the chair, you know, some kind of vacation there. And also, on a lighter note, two aspects. I appreciate the fact that, you know, the IDT thought so strategically as to place leaders on the steering wheel of the financial controls. There must be a reason, you know, for that. I appreciate that. And lastly, the two gentlemen in the middle rows, I think IDC has got a very strategic thinking CEO. Appreciate the way it comes across. Maybe because I've got a marketing background, I don't think you can resist what he says. I can very well imagine how well he must have been present, you know, in the interviews. I really like the way he comes across. It gives hope. And lastly, we appreciate you, KGM. The fact that you have acknowledged that you do have a responsibility to do the best you can for the sake of South Africa to frustrate the process. I thought I would close that now. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Honorable Fulani, I'm not sure if I understood exactly what you wanted them to comment on. Because the point that you made earlier in your contribution, you spoke to when they restructure and re-employ certain individuals in certain posts. And there was a general acceptance that obviously, you, with regard to posts, you have to get the requisite people to with the requisite experience. Then you gave the example of people who were just the basis of the experience mainly being in governance as opposed to business. There was a general acceptance and understanding. So it's not just a question for the entity, but I also suppose that the department itself is very much aware. If the entity has to perform, you have to get the requisite people with the requisite skills in order to carry out that mandate. So that was very well accepted and understood by everyone. And I would not like to speak on behalf of the department or the entity, but my impression sitting there, I have the impression that everyone fully appreciated that point.
What the Honourable Bhutan calls business skills, we prefer to call professional skills. And we would like to put less emphasis on marketing and more emphasis on community capacitation and project, but otherwise, of course,
thank you. Thank you, Deputy
Minister. Well, thank you very much. I was going to say that one tends to be very cautious to say business only given the fact that you may have social democrats, communists and so forth. I'll stick to saying the best skills before purpose. Thank you.
This is why I said the requisite skills. Ladies and gentlemen, stakeholders, members, unfortunately, I'm not sure if I afforded tea this morning or this afternoon. There might be iced tea and iced coffee. I'm told if you go to Woolies and elsewhere, it's more expensive than the hot one. So please assist yourself. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. Greatly appreciated. Everyone, thanks.
Thank you.